me, they were advancing some really crazy arguments in the courtroom. Basically saying that it doesn't matter if the token is used for purposes of utility, they acknowledge that library is. It doesn't matter if the person buying it doesn't regard it as an investment. All that matters is someone bought it, the price goes up and down, and the price is going up and down based off of third-party efforts or efforts other than the buyer. And this is an incredibly inclusive definition of what is a security.
I live unbanked off of cryptocurrency, and I use Bitrefill extensively because it lets me pay with crypto at places that don't yet accept it directly. This one service, more than any other, helps me live on crypto, pay your prepaid phone bill, or buy gift cards to thousands of major retailers around the world, all with cryptocurrency, including for exact amounts so you don't have to buy more gift credit than you need for a specific purchase. You can use Bitrefill without an account, but if you get an account, you can earn rewards points, which translate to savings, and you can also hold a balance denominated in dollars or euros to protect yourself against market crashes. Go to bitrefill.com, click Create Account, and enter the referral code DCN, or follow the link in the description. Hey everyone, welcome. I have the wonderful pleasure of speaking to the one and only Jeremy Coughlin yet again. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well, actually. Sometimes people considered. Think I shouldn't be, but I am. I'm doing well.
Yeah, just like my friend Greg always says, better than I deserve. Never ask if I do it. And so, well, take that as you will. And a heads up, there's some construction going on in the house, so if you hear any bang bang, saw saw, drill drill, that's kind of what it is. But I wanted to talk to you about obviously library. And the court case, which has been something that's been ongoing for many years. I've had you bring it up at least twice before, I think. And it was last week, I believe, I went to the hearing in Concord about this thing. And yeah, I listened through the whole thing. Of course, they'd make you take your phone away and all that kind of nonsense. So I couldn't do my distracted self usual. So I'd actually listened to the whole thing. And yeah, it was kind of interesting. So definitely have some follow-up questions on your end to try to make this a more complete picture than just the little snippets and kind of things that we've seen so far. So first, would you mind just kind of describing from your perspective where we are in the case right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So my company has been under investigation by the SEC since April of 2018. Mm-hmm. So for more than 4 years, 4.5 years, that we've been under investigation. The central claim that the SEC is making is that we've violated securities laws, that basically every sale of an LBC, based off of what they were saying in court, I would say they believe that every exchange of an LBC is a security offering, not just ones from the company, although we can get into that. And I don't want to flip the interview on you too early or at all, but I'm very interested to hear your perspective, as a guy who this was your first time seeing some of these things that they were saying. I've heard this stuff. And I wish, actually, I was hoping that the transcript was going to be out by today, because to me, they were advancing some really crazy arguments in the courtroom, basically saying that it doesn't matter if the token is used for purposes of utility, they acknowledge that library is. It doesn't matter if the person buying it doesn't regard it as an investment. All that matters is someone bought it, the price goes up and down, and the price is going up and down based off of third-party efforts or efforts other than the buyer. And this is an incredibly inclusive definition of what is a security. Mm-hmm. It would include practically everything. I think it would clearly include Ethereum. And I think you could even argue that it would include Bitcoin, although I'm not claiming that the SEC is about to go after Bitcoin. But the SEC wants all of this under their jurisdiction. They want every cryptocurrency asset to be under their jurisdiction. I think that much is very clear, that this is what they're going for. They want every exchange, every American company, every American software developer, every American that touches blockchain. They want it all tracked, logged, and under their thumb. And, so I think this case is very big for the industry. It's very big for the space. What happens here? This will set a precedent for a lot of companies.
Yeah. And so that was, I definitely noticed that. And obviously, the SEC is not the judge in this case. The SEC is claiming things, you're claiming things, and a judge is deciding. And so that doesn't mean, I'm not trying to like brush aside the concerns that this could set a terrible precedence, because it absolutely could. But from my understanding, the judge does not have to rule entirely with either party according to their definitions of what victory is or isn't. The judge can basically make their own decision, and it might, and in my gut feeling, and I'm not a legal expert, it'll probably fall somewhere in between the two sides.
Yeah, I mean, look, my feeling, of course, is that we did nothing wrong, but that I don't need to win completely, to be honest. I mean, we were already willing to settle with the SEC. This case has cost us millions of dollars. It's been a huge distraction. So, you know, resolution is really what we need. Now, the only resolution the SEC has ever been willing to accept is one in which every asset is exchanged through a registered broker dealer, and it's treated as a security. All exchanges of the token in the United States treated as a security. That's the only thing they've ever been willing to accept. We've been willing to give them anything else, you know, money, whatever. So do I think that we did something wrong in 2016 or in 2017? Absolutely not. You know, no one was hurt. No one was defrauded. Everything was voluntary. None of those people even have a problem with me or the company. This is all entirely manufactured by the government. But quite frankly, if we lost on some of this stuff, but have a clear legal outcome and can move forward, that's a win. I mean, another aspect of this that actually goes overlooked is, like, we are not in undecided territory right now. Right now, Library is guilty, right? In terms of our ability to do business, in terms of our ability to work with vendors, in terms of our ability to operate in the United States, we are already guilty. There's no outcome that would be worse than what we're already going through, because everyone's so terrified of the SEC. And because once the SEC even opens a case against the company, that is itself considered evidence of it being a security. So if you if you're a United States company, you don't want to touch it. And we lost an Israeli vendor over this, right? You would think they shouldn't even care. But everyone's scared of the American government. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what country you're in. The American government is terrifying. No one wants to deal with it. So, you know, that's why we need this outcome, because there's such a chilling effect in the industry. This is actually one of the things we went over with our lawyers in discussing, in discussing settlement stuff, because it's like, even if we settled with the, like, we need an outcome that will allow people to feel comfortable working with us again. And so absent that outcome, you know, it's a big problem. So if there was a settlement, given that there's so much publicity around the case, a settlement has to produce an outcome that will make people feel comfortable, you know, working with the token again.
Yeah. And this seems to be, there's many thousands of blockchain projects out there. Many of them are under the U.S. jurisdiction. Relatively few have been sued by the SEC. This is definitely not something I ever paid attention to at all until Library and then later Ripple. But I believe EOS got fined something astronomical, and then they paid it and just moved on with their life. And in the EOS case, from me just offhandedly remembering it as an Ethereum token and stuff, as an ICO and then later a thing, it seemed to be a relatively clear-cut case of, you know, they were kind of selling what would be considered to be illegal securities, and then the SEC just hit them with a bunch of money, and then they just like paid it, and they just had the rest of their big war chest, and they just went on to do whatever they ended up going on to do. And so, yeah, you want to say something on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is what has been confusing to me, is like, in some of these other cases, the SEC has been willing to accept a settlement that didn't require future registration of the token. There's basically saying you broke the law in the past, but you're fine moving forward. And they were absolutely unwilling to give us that outcome in this specific case. And that is, I'm not generally too conspiratorial of a person, but that definitely does get me going a little bit here, because I've never been able to understand why in these other cases the SEC has been willing to take a settlement that doesn't include future registration. But in our case, you know, we said we'll give you anything. We'll destroy the company. You know, we'll fire everyone. I think the work would be picked up by, you know, other entities would fund it and so on. I'm not suggesting that the work would end, but like if the problem is, because some people have this idea that like it's somehow specific to the fact that we did do a pre-mine or this kind of thing. And it's like, well, we've offered all of these things. You know, we've offered to get rid of all of these things. So it's, you know, there is something going on in this case where it does feel like we're getting a bit of extra boot, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't know exactly why, other than, I mean, like, you know, well, center left regulators.
That kind of rolls into the question then is, why do you think you're targeted?
Yeah. Well, so I my actual answer at this point would mm-hmm. be different for why we were initially targeted as to mm-hmm. why it's continued.
Yeah. So how about, let's just start with them. Initially then.
So initially, I think it was simply because we made it easy, in the same way that, you know, the cop goes to where people speed the most, not where speeding is the most dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're a regulator and your boss says produce enforcements, you know, you do the same kind of thing that the cop does, and you go, well, where are people going downhill? And they're, you know, I'm not really doing things to make people safer, but I'm doing things because I can get more tickets, right? Mm-hmm. And so in our case, I foolishly thought that by being extra honest, by being extra transparent, that would protect me, that, you know, that like that the SEC would start and go, well, these guys are the most evil. We'll start with the most evil and we'll kind of work our way down the list. I think what they actually did was, well, who's the easiest to go after? And we'll start there. And in our case, they're like, well, all the evidence is just on their website and we can just download it. You know, they gave us a spreadsheet of every transaction they've ever done. And we can just use that. We won't even have to, get a bunch of. So I think the start of it was partially because we were just a very transparent company. You know, I came from the open source community, that kind of thing. And that's just part of my ethos. We've become less transparent because of some of this. I've learned. I've gotten smarter. Enough. Yeah, right. So I don't think initially, because also when they came out, you know, how many people were using Library at that time? It was, you know, 1/1,000, 1/10,000. Maybe even less than that of how many people are using it today. You know, there wasn't a lot of press and so on. So I think initially it was more that. And in terms of why it's continued with such venom, I mean, these guys, again, they are all center left establishment people who are very pro government, very pro controlling things, you know, anti-gun, anti-free speech, you know, they don't believe in these things. And so to have my company being, you know, our technology is keeping more people online that are getting deplatformed, that are saying things the government doesn't like. You know, our technology is the one that's used by the firearms enthusiasts who want to print mm-hmm. Their own weapons at their own homes or locally. You know, our tech is the tech being used. If you have the mindset of a center left regulator, you absolutely hate this. It terrifies you that people could be doing those things and you wouldn't be able to control it.
Yeah, so that might be a difference in, let's just say, the EOS case, for example, where EOS clearly, like, made a bunch of money selling tokens to people with an expectation of higher returns, and it was easy to just slap them with a fine and go away. Whereas, first off, Library made everything super transparent and easy. They're like, let's hit our quota. And also, probably a small company that they don't think would have the lawyers to really fight back too much. They're like, well, this is the one we'll make examples of because it's like not super high in the crypto rankings right now. They don't have that much. And then it drags on because they're like, oh yeah, these bastards are trying to fight everything that we use to control people. So is that kind of an accurate assessment, do you think? Of course, this is all speculation, of course.
Yes, and they also took their time. Like they filed the actual charges just a couple of months or maybe 6 months before they were going to hit the statute of limitations mm-hmm. on the first transactions that my company did. So I believe the first transaction that they're accusing us of being a securities violation is in the summer of 2016. And they filed the case in April of 2021 officially. And so that was just a couple of months before you hit the 5-year statute of limitations. So, you know, they and it's not, again, it's not like there was that much that we were really disputing. We were fully compliant. We complied with all the subpoenas. We gave them all this information. And so, you know, I don't think they wanted this. They wanted this to play out as slowly as possible. I'm actually a little bit surprised that they haven't approached me yet. And you know, kind of just because at this point they've got a lot on the line for themselves.
Absolutely.
Know, more than we do, quite frankly, because they've got a good racket going on. And this case does risk blowing it all up. So if you're the SEC, you know, even if you think, even if you rate our probability of victory at like 10% or 20%, and I think it's substantially higher than that, by the way, but even if they're doing a sort of risk analysis and they're saying, well, we think, you know, Library's case is 5%, you know, like, yeah, it still doesn't make sense to risk it all, because it's like the judge was clearly pretty skeptical of a lot of stuff the SEC was doing. You know, the judge was asking them questions about how they, what they consider a security that, you know, the SEC could not answer. And I think the judge was even sophisticated enough to understand that the standard that they were advancing would impact the industry tremendously. And he did have appreciation for how big the industry it was and how significant it is. You know, he wasn't a crypto skeptic.
Yeah. You know,
so
that was interesting. So like, that was my perspective on the hearing. It seemed first, like, if obviously I have some background information, right? But my, like, coming into this, like, straight on, perspective seemed to be that the SEC kind of knew, I got the feeling that they knew that they were making some ridiculous claims. And the reason that they're trying to advance the ridiculous claims is because they wanted a solid victory. And so they're going all the way over to the window to the other end. Now, that's not to say I don't think that they would, like, dispute final victory and declaring Bitcoin a security and everything else. Like, I don't think that they would have any problem with that. I don't think that that was their initial, I didn't get the sense that that was their initial goal. They wanted to just win. And based on the weirdness of the arguments, because, you know, I have, like, lawyers in the family and stuff, like, I kind of know how that stuff works. It seemed like they had an initial complaint, and when they're trying to come down hard, they realized over time that this is a harder case to win than we thought. And so let's come up with arguments whereby they can't win anything. It's not like, well, according to these arguments, we say, yeah, we get you're not a security now, you're fine, but back in the day you did some sketchy stuff and we want our pint of blood for that. It felt like they're trying to, like, start at something ridiculous, so if they get half of what they want, they still get all of what they want, if you know what I mean.
But I don't think they do. I don't think they do. Like, look, if it ends up being that we broke the law in 2016 or 2017, like, quite frankly, that's not really a big deal. Like, that's fine. I mean, that's, you know, we deal with it. We you know, make whatever payment they say that we have to make, and we move on, we continue. So, you know, like, that's a win, right? And because then we would have, and honestly, at that point, we would have a huge asset, because the only coins that arguably have some regulatory clarity are the ones that have gone through an actual process with the SEC. Now, it's impossible to get a no action letter from them on crypto, at least on anything that's freely tradable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we would have something that almost no one else has, which is actual clarity. And so, you know, that's actually a really big asset for us. If the only way that you can get regulatory clarity is to go through a whole legal battle with the SEC, then we'd be one of very few companies that actually have it.
Yeah, that is something interesting. Also, the judge in the beginning made it clear that he was not interested in setting new precedent as much as he could, that he wanted to apply current case law and things like that to just basically he did not want to add sweeping new definitions of what a security may or may not be, which it seems like as he was grilling the SEC on this, which, you know, was kind of pleasantly surprised that he took him to task on some things or seemed incredulous, it seemed like he was not ready to buy their arguments of literally everything under the sun is a security, because anyone who sells something that then could possibly go up in value at some later date is selling legal security.
Yes, he really did. And I mean, to me, of course, I have my own biases that are very pro me.
Yes.
You know, I didn't understand how it wasn't, like, really, like, open and shut at that point, because the whole part of the whole idea is there's supposed to be some clear standard here. And the judge is in court. He spent months reviewing this stuff reviewing the precedents, getting up, like, he wasn't coming in cold. He had read the other cases that, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of them. And so it's like, he's in court being like, effectively saying something like, well, this doesn't make sense to me. I can't make sense of this.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then isn't it over?
Like, well, that's the thing. Like, it appears the judge has a different job from the SEC. It's not to rule in their favor or in Library's favor, but rather to rule on the case. And some of the things he was asking that I did want to, like, you know, go back to, like, the hard questions portion is he basically was asking about, you know, when the initial sale. So roughly, what, 50% of the Library eventual coin supply got pre-mined, right? Or what was the actual percentage?
It's a little under 40%.
Yeah. And so a big chunk got created in the beginning. The company has that or had that. And then the company started to sell that. And so the complaint, I guess, is the consumptive versus speculative value of it. Of if you're selling something whose primary use case is something else, something practical, then that's probably not a security. Or, I mean, again, we're not talking the SEC's arguments here. That's a little crazy. But if you are selling something that you can't really do very much, like the primary thing you can do with it is buy it and hope it speculates, it fluctuates, and hope it goes up in time, then that might lead something to be more of a security. And so the SEC mentioned like 4 videos on the Library platform at the time of whatever, which who cares about how many, like it's the protocol is able, you're able to upload millions on day one if that so it was your desire. So I don't buy like the 4 videos argument thing. But it does seem like the usage of the token in the very beginning tended to be much, just and is just to be fair to like all crypto, including even Bitcoin today, the usage is largely like speculative. Not the protocol level utility that comes from that, but the practical, like what do most people do with crypto? They buy it and hope it goes up. And so it could have been much more during the initial sale, right?
Yeah. So I don't want to speculate as to what percentages were win. And I do know that our third party independent analysis, which was accepted by the court, showed that at least in recent years, the percentage of Library usage that's for its intended purpose is higher than Ethereum, which again makes sense. Like, you know, Library has got to be one of the least speculated in cryptocurrencies, well,
especially
right?
today.
But I think actually more relevantly, you know, the judge, he went down this path, but then he actually kind of rejected it because mm-hmm. this is where he was asking these questions about, well, what if it was 75% mm-hmm. intended usage versus 25 versus 25 and 75, you know, he flipped it. He said, what if it was both ways? And then he kind of said, well, that would create a test that couldn't be clearly applied by a court because you couldn't get that kind of information. So then he seemed to kind of reject that it hinged on the percentages. So that comes back to he's looking for this kind of clear test that doesn't appear to exist. The SEC couldn't advance one. And to be fair, our counsel couldn't advance one. But all mm-hmm. of the tests that both sides are advancing were saying, well, look at this case and use this test. The judge would kind of go, well, that doesn't apply, you know,
yeah,
strictly
we can't do
for
that.
This or that reason.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed is another thing the judge hit on was that the revenue model for the Library company, for Library Inc., that basically, and it seemed like a sticky spot, and then something got clarified where at first it's like, how does Library make money that is outside of the hoping the token goes up in value, or I guess at least maintains value, outside of selling the tokens to people, what's the revenue model? And for a little while there was no answer, but then later counsel got clarified.
Yeah, that part was very frustrating to me because I'm sitting there not allowed to talk, and there were much better answers that were not, you know, because look, it's not mm-hmm. something that I've gone over. It's not something that had come up. The SEC never asked that in questioning. And so, you know, our attorney was just not well briefed on the ways that the company has been making money and the ways that the mm-hmm. company could get money. And also just the very straightforward, answer that it's incredibly common in the tech space for, especially with things that are growing at the rate that, that Library is growing at, to not be concerned with immediate monetization. This idea that if you have a piece of software that's being used by millions and millions, tens of millions of people, there's you know, basically always a way to monetize that.
Now, how common
is it? I will say in Library's case, that's harder because of all the open source stuff, but like that's a very straightforward, easy answer. It's very common. And, you know, unfortunately, that wasn't given. But I think we later also, you know, but it was later clarified that Odyssey is making money. You know, Odyssey is doing ads. Odyssey is doing credit card processing, you know, so.
Yeah. How common, because I'm not a tech entrepreneur. I have seen, again, companies like Pinterest. I used Pinterest for a while. And I was always thinking, like, how the hell is this thing going to make money? Like, where's the revenue model? And I kind of stopped using it a little around when they implemented the revenue model, which, you know, probably doesn't work out super well. But how common in the tech space is it to have a product and not no revenue model yet, but no clear public plan for a revenue model?
Well, I'd say the key word there is public. We have plans. Mm-hmm. We have, and I could, if the court ever wanted to see them, I could show them various, you know, private documents, business plans, conversations that we've had with our investors, with our board, you know, this kind of thing. So there's never, there's never been any. There's always been one. That's always been there. And you know, we chose. You know, to focus on growth first because we thought that was the most important thing to be focused on.
Mm-hmm. Now, this gets into a little bit of like kind of what about is or what if ism. It's kind of interesting to note having Library is a very non-typical project for today in terms of, first off, proof of work mined coins. They're just very rare. Just like, was it Grin and was like the newest one or like one of those ones. I remember when Zcash was proof of work, but now they're trying to not be. It seems to be an older generation thing to be proof of work, especially purely proof of work, but also the whole pre-mine thing. Like almost everyone wants to do like DAOs and governance endowments and stuff, but to have just like an old fashioned kind of like the pre-mine funding method, maybe. So there's been a lot of those early proof of work, obviously Bitcoin is sacrosanct and perfect, right? Everyone, I don't care how many coins Satoshi has or Craig Wright has or whatever you want to say, like it's according to the crypto people, it's perfect, right? But a lot of other proof of work coins had a fair launch, but not really. Like there was an inflation bug, whether accidental or not. There were like ninja mining where, you know, so if you had...
There's been zero indicators, sorry.
So basically, if you guys had said this is a fair launch project, we're a donation run, whatever, blah, 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 and then you just happen to have enough miners ahead of time to collect enough coins to kind of do the practically same thing. If you basically been exactly how you are, but dishonest about, no, we were like a fair launch from beginning. We have no seed capital war chest. It just happened to be donated to us. Do you think that you'd be in a different position if you'd behaved kind of, if you'd done decentralization theater and like been dishonest?
Yes, but not because of the actual legal opinion of the SEC, more due to their operational practices in terms of how they actually identify and determine who they're going to go after. The legal arguments that the SEC is making would apply 100% in both cases. And in both, you know, and the SEC has not made the pre-mine specifically, you know, their arguments do not hinge on that at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, the fact that it was a pre-mine was, you know, barely discussed. It was that the company had tokens and was selling them, you know, while simultaneously improving the protocol. That's it, right? So if we had mined a bunch of those at the beginning, I don't think legally their argument would be any different. But as I said, what I think got their attention, they are the cop who sets the speed trap up in the most obvious area. There's not that many actual SEC enforcement agents. Mm-hmm. And so if we had instead, you know, done the thing where you set up multiple companies and, you know, move the money around and do the things that a bunch of other companies did, then I think that we would have escaped scrutiny for that reason, but not because that's actually legal. And some of those companies in time you know, maybe getting the SEC knock, depending on how some of this stuff, you know, continues to play out.
Well, let's hit another hypothetical then, right? What if you did everything exactly the same way as you did it, except at the company didn't actually sell any LBC until like 2020 or 2019, late 2019, when there's a giant user base difference. Now, obviously, according to the arguments the SEC is presenting now, that would be absolutely not at all different, right? That would not change their argument one slight bit, because they don't care if there's like only one speculative, as long as there's speculative value, whatever. But do you think that that would have caused them maybe to just not come after you, because it seemed like a harder case and they pursued it when it was an easy case to begin with, and then it turned out to not be so easy? But if it had been less of a case like that, do you think that that would have changed anything?
Yeah, again, also probably. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think like just being, you know, even just a little bit more heads down, it just all played out the opposite. We ended up having the tallest head because we put everything online and made it very easy. You know, if you go back and look at how many different coins launched in 2016 and 2017 and 20, you know, and how many actually ended up getting sued by the SEC, I mean, it's like, it's very random. It's, you know, it's like what percentage of speeders get caught, you know, or whatever, that same kind of thing. It's, you know, so we happened to catch their attention. And so, you know, any number of things we could have done to not catch their attention, I think would have resulted in things playing out substantially differently.
Yeah. Now let's hit another hypothetical. What if everything was the same, except instead of the pre-mine portion, that part never got created, it was just mined from scratch, and Library Inc. decided to raise fiat capital with traditional investors and just say, like, look, we're building this revolutionary protocol anyone can work on. We're going to build software and stuff like that that operates on top of this that will be very powerful. We just have to build the infrastructure too. And you only raised fiat through like traditional, you know, with, whether it's like IPO or whatever else, whatever other kind of traditional fundraising, and you never did any, the token was just freely mined by whoever, and you guys never even touched it, much less like sold it to people. How do you think that would make things different?
Again, based off of the, so it's, I mean, my answer is probably going to keep being the same here, where like, you know, sort of like pragmatically, it would have made a difference. In terms of the actual legal arguments that they are making, it would not have. So, same answer, basically.
Yeah, so it seems like in a lot of these cases, it's almost like the legal arguments are the byproduct of the practical situation of they got one and then they made up legal arguments to suit the fact that they got one, rather than they got one because they already had those legal arguments in mind.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And that's why they make different arguments in our case versus the Ripple case. I mean, there's no actual internal coherency to what they're doing. I mean, and one very clear point that makes this very, that makes this obvious, that I like to bring up a lot, which is that like, if Ethereum morphed, right, this morph theory, like if you have clear criteria, then you should be able to state very clearly, like you should ideally be able to state down to the day or the hour, at a minimum, like the month and year. You've never heard this, right? Like the SEC took this 5-year span and said, well, at the beginning, it was a security, and at the end, it's not. You know, if there was a remotely rigorous or clear standard, then they could say when. But there isn't one. It's all made up.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to, like, expectations of, like, the ruling and stuff. So if I'm putting myself in the judge's shoes, right? If I'm pretending I'm the judge in this case, where I'm trying to enforce current law, I'm also trying to not really create too much precedent, but I understand that there's some precedent to be had. I've heard the arguments of both sides, etc. I got to make a ruling, and there's no way I can just rule, now the library is fine, let them go. You know, I mean, that's not a legal opinion. That is just the opinion of like someone as a judge. Like, they don't tend to just like, the government sides with the government at like most of the time, right? At least in a lot of things. So probably what I would expect from this thing would be something like, library started as a security, and therefore here's a fine, but at this point it no longer is, so the token doesn't have to register anymore. And do you think that there's any realism to that expected, or idea of a potential outcome to this case?
I think it's a possible outcome. I would certainly be happy with that outcome, or be satisfied with that outcome. Mm-hmm. It's not, again, not because I think we broke the law, because it would get us through it and we could move forward. So one of the reasons that I think that might not happen is it's not clear to me. The judge is looking for a test that he can apply. And so it's like, what, and he wants it to be a clear one. He wants it to be, there to be a clear standard that can be applied. And it's not clear to me what he would be using to do that. Because I think the only way that you could get in, you know, the test that would differentiate those two would be something like a sufficiently decentralized test, or something related to the proportion of usage, you know, what portion was the one way versus the other. And he showed an explicit disinterest in a test along those lines. So like, that doesn't mean there isn't a test out there that he's going to come across and say, well, when I apply this one, it seems like these were against the law and these weren't. And it is fully within the judge's power to separate the rulings. And by the way, to give the sort of details, there's, you know, in our case, there was one $10,000 sale extremely early, which we sold to a third party exchange just so that they could then resell it. I mean, it's $10,000. It wasn't about the money for the company. But that was by far the earliest sale. Then about over a year later, there were some public sales. And then there was, again, some smaller amounts of private sales. But again, we're talking about sums of money here that aren't tremendous. Several hundred thousand dollars is like around $300,000 worth of private sales. Private sales to people who explicitly said, we're not buying this for investment purposes. They explicitly said that.
And was that made clear in court documents as well?
Well, yes. I mean, the email is a matter, is in the record. But this is one of those things where it's like, you know, the judge seem to not care about that. And it's like, well, what are we supposed to do? Like, you know, what is the verification process that you want us to go through with a potential buyer? If even them explicitly stating we're not buying this as an investment, is insufficient. it's not clear what we want. So the SEC alleges that all of the public sales, which happened from 2017 all the way through 2021, was one continuous securities offering. So the SEC is saying in their filing that that is all one offering. So they're suggesting to the judge that he should decide on all of that one way or another and not split it up. But quite frankly, if we lost on the sales, the explicit sales as opposed to the exchange sales, like that's fine. It's like $400,000. It's like under $400,000 worth of sales total on both of them. Like fine. I mean, if the SEC wants $400,000 back, they can have it tomorrow. You know, so it's like, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely think the judge has an unenviable position here, which is to rule between two diametrically opposite parties, but also to rule in a way where you basically have to apply a standard. And the problem is a lot of these alleged things apply to a technology which is new and emergent, that doesn't really lend itself to a test. Like, do you know what percentage is consumptive versus speculative? And the answer is just, well, absolutely no. No one can. So you can't. And that would be the ideal standard, right? To be like, well, if it's at least this percent, this usage rather than this, or of this percent of like total users and total volume or whatever value, then we could apply that. The problem is there's just no way to get that information, and so you could not apply that.
Yeah, I don't really like that standard either, because it actually puts it outside of the sphere of control over the company. Like if a bunch of third parties start talking about library as a good investment and then people buy it as an investment, I can't do anything to control that or to stop it, right?
Yeah.
So similar to a bunch of collectibles, how do collectibles end up being quote investments? It's never the company, right? Like Beanie Babies or Wizards of the Coast or whoever, like they're not going around. They are never going around saying these things are investments. It's third parties who have turned them into investments. Mm-hmm. And so I think any standard has to hinge on how is the company conducting its business? What are they saying? What are they encouraging? What are they doing? Because otherwise, it would mean that some third party could make anything a security simply by creating investment hype around it. And so I don't like any standard that's in that direction, because it seems to me that that takes the control away from me. It has to be about what my company does, what we say, how we communicate our product. And are we talking about something as an investment? Are we hinting that it's an investment? Are we saying, come buy this so you can use it. Come check out this technology. Come use this technology. And that's where, you know, our communications have very relentlessly been the second fashion. All the SEC has that's contrary to that is, you know, basically a couple of one-of messages from, like, you know, moderators in a chat room. It's a very small, it's a couple of drops in a large body of communications. So which, by the way, is the standard here, because there actually is case law here where that ruled in favor of the, you know, a couple of communications, if they're a small part of the body, aren't sufficient. So I would prefer something in that direction.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be, it's interesting to see how the ruling actually turns out, because it seems like there's a lot of things that would set up like a clear path for library to just be left alone, I guess. But I can't see that happening at the same time entirely. So it'll be kind of interesting to see. So if you had everything to do over again, if let's just say you get teleported back, you're like, what? It's 2015 and you're like brainstorming this company, you got people on board or whatever. You haven't actually minted any tokens or anything yet. What would you do differently about this whole approach, knowing what you know now about the potential regulatory risks? And I'm not saying that, like, you know, that no one could have known at the time. You only had to know by, you know, you passed the bill to see what's in it, right? So yeah. What would you have done differently?
I probably would.
Which, by the way, this is not an admission of guilt or wrongdoing anyway. I just want to get that out of the way.
No, this is a theoretical description of how someone.
Yeah, so, like how would you be smarter knowing how terrible the government is?
So one funny thing is I would have been more aggressive, right? Because if I'm going to get in trouble anyway, like I could have had $50 billion instead of 10, you know?
Yeah.
So I would have been more aggressive. I would have been more secretive. I would have been less transparent. I probably would have go ahead and done multiple entities if I could do it again. So basically completely separate entities that are doing engineering work and entities that are buying and selling the token. I think you would completely separate those. And I would say it probably can't hurt to do the fake fair launch. You just do it that way. I mean, legally speaking in the arguments, I don't think it makes a difference. But again, it at least, like, you're just creating more layers. You're just making it harder on them. So, you know, you could do it, do it that way. And then I would have put even more money away. You know, because again, like trying to be the good guy got me basically nowhere. So like, why would I be a good guy the second time around? You know, be a worse person, is kind of, I think. And by the way, I don't mean, when I say be a worse person, I don't mean that take the money and run or anything like that. Right. I would then still, scam. I'm very interested. I mean, one thing that I think is very clear from our track record, and all this again came out in the court case, right? There's been no personal enrichments. I paid myself a lower salary than I could have made in private industry. You know, no bonuses, none of this stuff. We are believers. We have been focused on building. And so that part wouldn't change, because I do think that's how you actually succeed over time. But in terms of these early days of crypto stuff, which we were a part of, I would have been even more aggressive and even legally, you know, legally shadier, because being straightforward and honest didn't help. It only hurt.
Yeah. It's just like makes you like an easier kind of victim. Right. So what would your advice be to people operating today about, you want to start some sort of a revolutionary decentralized blockchain protocol, and you want to have a company that, like, you want to have the ability to, like, start it and run it and stuff. What are some of the biggest advice things you would give them? Of course, the biggest one you already said is, like, don't be honest and straightforward and transparent. What else would you say, do you think?
I'd say probably don't do it in the U.S. Like, what are you actually getting? And again, like, just not being in the U.S. just puts you further down the list of people that they're going to go after. It doesn't mean you're safe, but again, you're farther down the list. So I'd say probably don't do it in the US. You can do it anonymously. Psychologically, that's a tough one for me. I'd like get nervous about having to stay secret all the time, you know, that I could mess up and slip and my identity came out. But if you're comfortable with that kind of thing, but certainly you could do it anonymously. I don't think that hurts. I think that's more of like a, where are you at in terms of, you know, maybe that's something that's fine for you. So you could do it anonymously, and yeah, I'd say separate the entities, you know, so don't have any entities that are buying and selling the token. Just try to wall them off from entities that are doing engineering work. Again, just to protect yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, and so where, really quick, where does Library go from here as far as the project? Now, obviously, there's going to be summary judgment in like, what is it, 2 to 6 weeks or something like that, or 3 to 7 weeks, somewhere around there. You're going to get a judgment, and then what's the multiple choice situation out of there? Like, if this happens, then this will happen. If that happens, then that'll happen.
Yeah, well, so truthfully, I think the case gets appealed either way by either side. Mm-hmm. So it probably doesn't end regardless of what the judge does. We are likely to Odyssey's already become pretty independent from Library. Without getting into specifics, it's likely to become even more independent, although it will, of course, continue to use the Library technology. We are working on getting some other independent entities up and running, one product specifically related to the 3D firearms files, which is being worked on the guys that do this work. So they're going to be launching a GrabCAD competitor, or what's the other one, Thingiverse competitor that's based off of Library. So we're going to see other stuff continuing. The core Library work is also going to continue. Like, we've been continuing to improve the protocol. We've been continuing to do this kind of work. And that's all going to continue. So, you know, the work is going to continue. More and more of it's not going to be done under Library Inc. I think because Library Inc. has become a bit of a tainted vehicle, you know. But the work's going to continue. I'm very committed to continuing the work. All the engineers are committed to continuing the work. And, you know, the product's better than ever. It's being used by more people than ever. There's more content that's available. It works better. It's more usable. It's more user-friendly. There's more features, you know. So, like, I've been dragging this ball around my neck trying to go up a flight of stairs, you know, for years. So, like, I don't think things get – there's almost no outcome outside of, like, I don't know, complete seizure of everything if there was something really crazy that would be worse than where we are.
Yeah.
So, I think we are able to move faster and do more once we reach this resolution. I'm not worried about it in the sense that, like any outcome is good because there will be an outcome.
Yeah. Do you think there's any chance that the Library token itself becomes so legally tainted that you have to switch all the infrastructure to a Library fork? That is a completely different project. None of the founders have any of the tokens. There's no pre-mine, etc. Just like a code fork, but like call it like Odyssey Chain or something.
So that is something that we have discussed. One of the reasons I'm against that is there are a lot of people that have the token. There are a lot of people who have put their time in, who've been creating content, who've been doing all this kind of thing. And like, I really feel like I and we would be letting those people down by doing something in that direction. And then if you do something in that direction, you offer some kind of redemption or exchange, then I think you just carried the liability with you. So if there was a way to simultaneously push a reset button and, you know, sort of honor and respect the people who have invested their time and their energy into Library, I would consider doing that if I thought it could solve things. It's just not clear to me that there is a way of doing both of those things.
All right. Well, where can people follow you and the updates on the case?
They
and
can
all the
follow
other stuff.
Follow me on Library. My channel is KAUFFJ. They can also follow the Library company, which also posts updates. The platform that I'm most personally active on is beyond Library is Twitter. So you can follow me on Twitter at Jeremy Kaufman.
All right, fantastic. Well, thanks very much for chatting, and yeah, we'll see you around.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on crypto with BitRefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.